Good morning. Welcome to the program for this Tuesday, the 10th of July. Very nice to have you with us. It's a fine day, and why shouldn't it be? We have a lot to discuss. We have a lot to talk about. We're very excited to be with you. We have a great panel, as always. We have guests near and far, and what could go wrong? What possibly could go wrong? Rich Honan is with us. He is a corporate attorney. He is our dear friend and a regular panelist on this program. We are thrilled whenever he can make time. He loses a lot of money when he comes on our show. So,
but I make it up in volume.
Make it up later.
Hey, Rich, yeah. Is it like $1,000 an hour?
At least.
That's right. We're glad we don't have to pay that. We thank you very much for being here. J.P. Miller is with us. I have to tell you, oddly, this is an odd conversation. You find yourself in these odd marital conversations sometime, but I was...
Uh-oh.
Rich rolls his eyes. So I'm driving home from work yesterday, and my wife said, did anyone notice your haircut? And which seemed like an odd question, but I said, no one noticed my haircut. And she said, oh, that's a shame. And when I walked in this morning to say hi to JP, he said, hey, nice haircut. And I said, there you go.
Boom.
That's terrific. Excellent. Thank you very much.
So, it's a really great haircut.
I am so glad you mentioned that, because I have an appointment with my guy today, and I forgot completely all about it till you said the magic word haircut.
Barber to the stars.
That's right. Joe B. Ritmo.
So... thank you for noticing. And Terry Austin, the guy who does my hair, thanks you for noticing. J.P. Miller is the Empire Report. He is the proprietor, and it's a wonderful news aggregator. It's a must-see every single solitary day, and we're thrilled that you're here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Also...
What time do you get it up in the morning? I mean, as it were.
The email is usually sent, hopefully, before 6:15 a.m., so it's all updated, hopefully, by 6:15 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's updated a couple times a day, at noon and at night.
That's actually a lot.
Rosemary Armeo is on the telephone with us. We are thrilled. We're trying out a new phone number or a new. She has a new office, and we're thrilled.
Yes.
So how's
on time for the first time? But I noticed, Joe, you didn't mention that Rich was there. We have not gone one-on-one in a long time. Many months of horror and outrage. And I can't believe he's here. You have much to answer for, Rich Honan.
Well, I'm actually very excited to talk to you.
I know
it's been
so long. He was legitimately excited when I told him we were going to be on the show today.
As my mother would say, don't take advantage.
Well, we're thrilled we have you two kids on. It's that's very fun. Welcome, Rosemary. Anything new and exciting that we should know about?
No, we moved into a new office. That's the main thing involving me at the moment. All right. And the phone is working, so.
There we go. Okay. Alan Chartok,
hey.
Good morning.
Hey.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, you may say good morning. I don't think it is a good morning, because I watched what happened in that Supreme Court appointment yesterday, and very scary to me. Very scary in terms of the future of my country, my kids, my grandchildren.
Well, let's talk about that. We'll start there. It seems like the most obvious place to start. That was the thing, you know, I asked this yesterday on the show, right before the end, if anybody wanted to take a guess as to what time the story would break prior to the announcement. And the time sat at first, but it was while the president was walking out. It was pretty amazing that they kept it secret. For a White House that leaks as much as this White House does, to me it was amazing that it was not... announced prior to that.
I think NBC News may have had it a couple minutes before, but what I was wondering is, do all these newspapers have to write four different stories for the four different nominees in case these different nominees are, you know, they don't know who it is, and so do these reporters then write the stories that night, or do they have stories written about the other potential nominees?
What do you think, Rosemary?
Stories are all written as soon as you get down to the last few. Most of them have large bios anyway, so it isn't a ton of work, but yeah, you get it all written ahead of time. I hate the whole theatricals. We've turned announcements of the Supreme Court into reality television, and all of us go along with it. I hate it.
I mean, you go to the New York Times today, they've got 6 or 7 articles about this guy. You know, it's amazing.
Oh, no.
It's warranted. He's one of the 9 most important people in the whole country.
And it's like obituaries. You know,
now,
they do the obits.
Now,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
Rosemary, the thing you just talked about, the theatrics, and you said, and we all fall right into it. But what do you do? I mean, I felt the same way last night. I was like, okay, so he's made this big deal about this announcement, and it's all very choreographed, and this is going to happen. But what do you do? I mean, what's the alternative?
I think you could, for example, not talk about, as the Times does, the highly anticipated, much speculated about. That's language that's right out of the White House. You have the stories ready and you run them, but we have to say we didn't, just like we did. We started the conversation with how wonderful that they kept the secret. Why is that a good thing? Why is it important at all?
Well, I don't know that anybody here said it.
And now we have to vet them.
But Rosemary, I don't think anybody here thought it was wonderful that they did that. We just thought it was remarkable that leaking White House did it.
It is remarkable, and what the most important thing for the White House was to have people not know who the nominee is going to be, so that as many Americans as possible tuned in last night, so that the president had an opportunity to say, you know, be on message about what a great pick Kavanaugh is, and then have the American people directly hear from Kavanaugh, hear about his mother and his daughters and all the positive things that, you know, it's, they know that the onslaught's going to come from the media and the negative stuff on him, but to hear a positive message from the nominee and the president, I think was positive for the White House. That's what they were looking for, and I think that's what they got with a big TV audience last night.
Please note, we were 19
right.
minutes
in. Like I say, it was reality television. Why do we allow that?
Well, but why, I hear that as well, because I, on one hand, you don't want to cheapen the event, but on the other hand, if he's expanding the group of people who would be watching the announcement, if there's now a community of people who would be involved in this announcement in a way that they were not involved before, you know, pro or con, you know, why is that a bad thing? If he's bringing this down to a more populist level.
Are they involved or are they being held hostage?
I don't know. Nobody's. Look, the people who are being held hostage are us, are the news junkies, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody
yes.
else, you know,
no,
they can
true.
Either watch or not watch. We're the ones who are being held hostage. But I think there's a group of people who might not have paid attention, and maybe they are now, and I can't say that's a bad thing.
Well, I can say.
I think I want to talk about how there's now another extremist wacko on the Supreme Court rather than the way his name was announced.
Okay, so let's get to that. I wanted to note that JP was the first one to bring it up, but the man's name is Brett Kavanaugh, a politically connected member of Washington's conservative legal establishment. He has been tapped to fill Justice Anthony Kennedy's seat on the Supreme Court. The Democrats are promising quite a fight. Here's what we should know, however, about Judge Kavanaugh. He is a young man, 53 years old, a federal appeals court judge, former aide to President George W. Bush, and one-time investigator of President Bill Clinton. He worked on the Kenneth Starr investigation. Not a huge surprise given his conservative record, his elite credentials, and deep ties among Republican legal groups that have advanced conservatives for the federal bench. That is another way of saying what Rosemary Armeo just said, which was what a right-wing wacko, was that the term?
Extreme wacko.
Extreme wacko. All right. So why do you feel that way, and tell us what your concerns are about Judge Kavanaugh?
He is consistently pro-corporation, against small people. He is against reproductive rights. He does not see any sort of restrictions on abortion as overly burdensome to a woman's right to freedom of choice. He's against net neutrality. Important, I think, to our president and why he may have risen to the top of the list, does not believe that presidents should be subjected to investigations or to criminal charges while in office. I just can't think of a single measure about him that I like. Jeb Bush is happy. He was a lawyer in the White House under his father, which, you know, okay, but well, maybe he's an established Republican, but please let us remember that was when the White House was endorsing torture. There's nothing about any of his policies that I say, oh, well, maybe that'll work out. He's incredibly smart and very vital, so he's going to be around with these extreme views for a really long time. Oh, and the other thing is he's originalist, that the Constitution is supposed to be read as it was intended by the Founding Fathers when it was written in the days before there were automatic weapons and the Internet, for example.
Rich?
Did that cover it?
Yeah. That covers it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's going to be hard to I think a couple of things. It's obviously going to be hard for the left to mount the defense on the credential side. So I think they should probably, you know, be open and mount the defense, you know, on the philosophical side. I think you're allowed to do that. I think you're allowed to say that, yeah, we're not saying the guy's not allowed to be a judge, that he doesn't have the credentials. We just say that we just don't agree with his philosophy. And I think that would be the, you know, the stronger argument. The other thing is, and I'll ask the media people here, but doesn't this kind of help the Democrats? Doesn't this help the liberals? I mean, from my perspective, they've been kind of wandering on their message. You know, last week their message was, you know, ICE is a terrorist group and let's get rid of ICE and let's open the borders. And, you know, they're kind of struggling. And doesn't this help kind of coalesce them around a real substantive idea that maybe they could kind of...
Real substantive as opposed to caging children, and ICE is a terrorist organization.
No, but you think that's your strongest argument?
Thank you, President Trump, for coalescing the Democrats. Oh, my goodness.
No, but Rosemary, I think Rich has a point. And I'm the last.
God, we missed you, Rosemary.
I'm the last one.
I was just thinking that.
Who wants to say that? However, you know, Schumer has for the first time showed something that looked like anger over this. Came out with a real blast. It was tepid, but it was a real blast. And it may be an organizational plus. I'm already getting mail. You know, we all hear at least I do, every night from both sides of the aisle, and I'm getting a lot of stuff on the appointment of the judge. Let's try to remember one thing, and that is that it is these people, the Republicans, need to win in the same states they won in the last time. This doesn't have anything to do with how angry people are in Massachusetts or New York or other places. Their whole strategy is to keep on hammering those red states and the three or four states that could go either way.
I agree. I was personally hoping for Amy Coney Barrett. I thought another white male on the Supreme Court for some reason didn't sit well after the Gorsuch nomination. This person is, you know, there are political operatives in the world and there are legal operatives in the world. And this person is a longtime Republican legal operative. But he is a mainstream conservative nominee. You saw, you know, if Jeb Bush were president, if Marco Rubio were president, if Ted Cruz were president, you could see all of them nominating this guy. And you saw McCain come out and say he was a mainstream pick. So I think that the Democrats do have to fight this nomination, but it's always challenging to be in a fight that you kind of know you're likely to not succeed in.
Yeah, they're not going to win this.
Yeah.
At least with what we know right now, the Republicans plus a handful of Democrats who unfortunately would rather be judges and have their tombstones, you know, have that on it than do the right thing here. And I think there are two, three, four of them.
Oh, no,
I would just like to say that I never thought that the woman was a real contender because Trump.
Because Trump, you mean he was a misogynist?
He does not appoint women. He's perfectly comfortable to have a cabinet full of white men. Why would he not think the same about anything? Name it, Congress, the Supreme Court, the White House.
You make a point.
I don't know. Christian Nielsen might have an issue with that, but I think that I actually think that
She's one person out of how many, Rich?
Yeah, but I thought that I agree with you that I don't think that that the female judge was going to be in the running. But I thought she was there maybe for the next time, but also
to show that he was considering one.
Well, yes, but also to show someone who I think everybody believes is even kind of more firmly, you know, anti, you know, Roe v. Wade, and you know, he was kind of dangling that.
Roe v. Wade is dead. Roe v. Wade was, there was nobody on the list who was going to give a shot to Roe v. Wade.
Well, he said so. Trump said so. He said he wasn't going to consider anybody except that this guy's out front talking about how he, you know, believes in precedent.
Yeah, what's troubling about that is that the court has recently overturned some precedents that are kind of less than, you know, less than 100 years old, right? You know, we've seen them talking about cases that are, you know, 40 years old and overturning. And usually there's kind of a longer period of time that even if they disagree, that they will allow a Supreme Court precedent to stand. So that is a troubling trend for those of us who want to keep, you know, Roe v. Wade in place. But I think that you're still going to have, you know, Roberts is going to become the swing vote now. Is that kind of how you see it?
Yes.
Well, I think Roberts does what he has to do in order to keep the country on an even keel, as he sees it, not as I see it. So that's why we still have the remnants of Obamacare in this country, because he said this principle is important, that people have some health care. And he had to do intellectual
stuff. Now we have 5-4 against health care, too. This new guy doesn't like health care either. Doesn't like Obamacare.
Right, but there is Roberts, and Roberts was the one who pulled it in for them the last time. So, you know, Roberts, as Rich has just indicated, I think, could be the swing vote on something like that.
Well, I disagree slightly, because Roberts did not protect or completely defend health care. What he did was make it up to the states to decide whether to go in or not. And as we know, that's what really was one of the major downfalls. That's why it was failing, even when Obama was still in office. So I think there's no question that the wackos being appointed are extremely smart and strategic. And I think he hurt it in a different way without having to fully veto it.
Well, let me tell you. At the
in
risk
a way,
of,
that's scary.
Well, I think it's inaccurate. Roberts single-handedly saved Obamacare.
No question.
You would not have Obamacare
if it wasn't
for John Roberts.
True.
No question. No, but I see Rosemary's point. I think I said that intellectual gymnastics, you know, in order to do it. He didn't want to be seen as a double-crosser, so he said all kinds of bad things about it. But he did vote to save it. There's no question.
All right, we have about, we're just going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Rosemary Armeo is on the telephone. Both Rich Honan and J.P. Miller are in the studio. Alan is here. We welcome your calls, rather your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Four seconds.
Yeah, 4 seconds. I know that CNN is now reporting that.
All right, you're out of time.
Yeah,
we'll go back.
Okay, we'll do that.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Rich Honan on the panel this morning. And we, of course, welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So we've been talking about Brett Kavanaugh and being the pick for Supreme Court by President Trump. The question I ask the group now is about the fight. Chuck Schumer, as Alan indicated earlier, said, "I will oppose Judge Kavanaugh's nomination with everything I have." And Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who leads the barrister Republican majorities, had expressed misgivings about his path to confirmation, but said he was a superb choice. So that is the question that I pose to the group now, which is, is there any chance for the Democrats to kill this particular nomination?
There's always a chance, obviously. You don't know.
All right, how about a good chance?
No. I think the chances are here, and I will hear from some of my very good friends, how dare you even say this, but I think there's a very, very good chance that he makes it. They may hold him up a bit. They may get a while. When he was confirmed as in his last judicial appointment, they held it up. I believe I read 3 years before they let him through. But I think it could take some time. But that he's going to make it, from what we see now. I thought that the one thing Rachel Maddow was making a big thing with Chris Matthews about it last night is that he has been expansive about presidential power, number one, and you should be allowed to operate unfettered, basically, and that's this judge's belief in this thing. But then the second part of this is that he is really believes that you have to be impeached before you can be indicted or subpoenaed. And that is going to mean he's appointing a judge to the Supreme Court, and one out of nine, and he knows where that guy's going to be going.
Yeah, there. Other than Brett Kavanaugh, the two people with the most to gain out of this confirmation, Harris, are the two potential 2020 Democratic candidates that are on the Judiciary Committee that will be interrogating Kavanaugh, which are Cory Booker and Kamala Harris. I would look for them to really bring out heavy artillery and fireworks on the nominee.
If they have it.
They'll have a lot.
They'll have it rhetorically, if not substantively.
Yeah, and Alan, you bring up the presidential power, so that's definitely a big hot button. Huge. That I think they'll focus on. They'll also focus on a decision he had on allowing an undocumented worker to have an abortion while she was in prison or not, which he had a dissenting opinion against, and then of course his defense in at least one instance of Americans' rights to have automatic weapons. So those, I think, are the three: presidential powers, automatic weapons, and Roe v. Wade will be kind of the three hot button issues for both Kamala Harris and Cory Booker to hit him on. And it'll be a competition between the two of them as to who can be the best opposer of this nominee.
Which she will win. I'm not saying she's going to win the nomination, but I'm saying my prediction is that Kamala Harris is going to come out of this much better than Cory Booker does. I think it's more in her wheelhouse. And second, I think he's fumbled a couple of times. He's gotten a little too fiery on issues that didn't deserve it. And now I'm not sure really where he's going to go. Yeah. Rosemary, I don't know what you
actually
see
we
from
lost.
Out there.
We lost Rosemary. We tried.
I was wondering why I wasn't being interrupted.
We tried to improve the phone line, and there was an echo, and people were complaining about it. So, okay.
I thought the echo was productive, to be honest with you, because we heard Rich twice and you twice. So that was good. You see?
So we're working on it, but for the moment, Rosemary is not with us. So, and I think is probably bowed out. At this point, let's look at so we're talking about the chances of confirmation, and a protracted fight, but obviously it's going to happen before the fall, right?
Well, they'll try to. Yeah. There's an awful lot of material to go over here. And they're going to, all of these decisions, hundreds of decisions.
300, yeah.
They'll slow walk it. Slow walk it.
But you want it before the first Monday in October.
Sure.
That's what they want.
Which is when the new Supreme Court term starts.
Yeah,
you'd like to have a full court.
And if you're the Democrats, why not, instead of delay, why are you going to give President Trump a victory a couple weeks before an election? Why not allow them to get this through in the summer when people aren't really paying attention in August, and go back to the battles that are more suited and more in your wheelhouse than the Supreme Court?
I don't know if you're right about that, JP. The truth is that I think this is their lead issue. I think Rich said it before, their lead organizing issue. And I don't think you give it to him in the summer. I think you make him wear it around his neck, to be honest with you. And I think, by the way, this is a terrible, terrible dilemma for the American people. And there's not much of a silver lining that you're taking this right-wing reactionary guy and you're putting him in. And people will be walking around, people I know, my friends, they'll be walking around with their heads down and very upset about this. But there may be a slight silver lining in that. If it's so oppressive, then it may really be an organizing principle for the Democrats, who now really have to work at it. I mean, even Chuck Schumer, who has been pathetic.
Pathetic.
I mean, he's a friend and I like him, but the truth of the matter is that he's been pathetic in terms of his leadership role. And here, all of a sudden, you see a little spunk.
I think Schumer is in almost as much trouble as Pelosi. I don't know that Schumer survives this fight, especially if they get hit in the midterms. I think that people are still going to be saying, look, he misplayed, the Merrick Garland thing, forget that. He couldn't do anything about that. But he misplayed the Gorsuch.
Well, he could have gotten angrier, Rich. He didn't show much emotion, much real leadership.
I agree with that. But I think the people are going to be pointing him, say he got he got played on Gorsuch by making it easy for McConnell to kind of to abandon the supermajority, and now that path is open. He should have not allowed that to happen, and then it would have been harder for McConnell when he really does need just the bare majority to do it.
But to some degree, that goes back to the Democrats who allowed it for the lower court nominations, the nuclear option. If they hadn't done that, he would have had a lot more to argue about.
Yeah, and McConnell said it at the time, right?
Yeah, sure.
He said it to Harry Reid. He said, the tables are going to be turned.
And the tables are going to be returned against the Republicans in another 2 to 4 years on this as well. So they may have a victory coming up in the next weeks and months on this, but if the Senate flips next year, it's going to be a defeat.
That's a big if. If the Senate flips, I don't see.
Well,
the Senate
at
flipping.
Some point, the Senate's going to flip.
Yeah, right? I don't know if it flips during the Trump era, however long that is. But I mean, because there's just a lot. If you look at the demographics of the amount of Democrat open seats, coming up, that are actually going to be fought out on the Senate side, I think it's higher. But I don't think. Alan, you would know. You think the Democrats are loving Schumer right now, loving his leadership?
Well, what happens is these guys get in. I've watched it in the state legislature. They get in, even if they're not good at their jobs. Nobody wants to go somewhere else because every one of these guys thinks, next time I'm up. But then when somebody else comes up, they don't like it, because they keep the guy who's in place in place. I think Schumer has agreed with this president way too much and really needed to be out there, and he hasn't been.
But I think it's interesting, Rich, that you brought this up because I've been wondering this, and that is, but Pelosi seems to be the target. Pelosi seems to be the one everyone's talking about of being in trouble. And is it just a matter of time before they catch up to Chuck Schumer, or are we there already, or are they just going to ignore it?
Or you mean, that Chuck Schumer catches up to Pelosi in terms of unpopularity?
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Now, let's remember that they worked on Pelosi. I mean, she was their number one target all this time. Not Schumer, but Pelosi. So I don't think the Pelosi, and to answer Rich's earlier question, I don't think Schumer's in nearly the disfavor that so many Americans hold Pelosi in. Not me, but a lot of Americans, because she has been the target of the Republican machine, propaganda machine.
Yeah, and she's clearly, you guys know this better, but I mean, she's had some gaffes. She's made some statements.
Did you say gaffes?
Gaffes.
Oh, I thought you meant gas.
Yeah, okay. She's made some statements that
Said that too. But not into that.
Are just going to be fodder, later on. But I think it's a little more under the radar. I Schumer. People have got to be saying, all right, 21 federal judges already. I think there's people here in New York State. I'm certainly one of them who said, all right, so he's ready to filibuster on illegal immigrants, but he didn't filibuster on getting rid of the state and local tax exemption that we here in New York State pay so much. Where was he for us then? As a New York State voter, that offended me.
So much of what we don't know becomes so important in all of this. We really don't know what all of the Schumer-Trump relationships have been in the past. We do know they have some things in common, for example, the protection of Israel, which is huge for both men.
And trade.
And trade. So, you would hope. I can guarantee you one thing. If Bernie Sanders was the leader in the Senate, they would be hell to pay.
Well,
not only that, I just want to go back to these Democrats, faux Democrats, who want to win in their Republican states. And I want to say, don't you wish and don't you think that if they came out strongly and said, this is a terrible thing, a terrible nomination, and I'm my own man, and I'm going to say so that there's almost more potential for nomination, for saying yes to that than there is if they just say, me too, I'm going along with this as a sort of weak person.
Hey, you think that's a resonant issue in West Virginia?
No,
it doesn't strike me as
I'll
one.
Tell you what is, Rich. The idea that you want somebody who's a fighter and who's an individual as opposed, to a go-alonger. And I think that by saying, okay, maybe he'll let me be, if I, you know, in this nomination, and he won't, by the way, if I just support his, it's so awful.
Well, the case that they make is that they're not being go-alongers, that go-alongers would stick with their party. And the case that they make is, I'm an individual. I buck right. my party on important issues. I thought that this person was a qualified nominee. That's the case that they make. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
I get it.
That's the case that they make.
And here's what, JP. I call bull duty on this. That is not what is happening. They are weak as a result of this.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have letters, and we'll get to those. First, we will hear this and be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, and Rich Honan. Rosemary Armeo was with us. She had to leave, though, because we're having phone difficulties. She just wrote a note and said, I just reported phone difficulties to our tech guy, and he's put it on top priority to investigate out of fear of bugging. So sorry to miss out on the rest of the conversation. Love to all roundtable listeners. Well, not all of them, but most of them. Rosemary.
That's funny. So,
well, I will say it was a pleasure being able to talk with her. Yeah,
so
I miss her.
We'll get the phone fixed, and maybe we can work on getting her a new phone.
Hey, boss, could I just follow up on one thing that I was sort of had to stop on a couple of times ago? Trump is now reported to be saying the Russian thing in the Russian discussion is going to be the easiest for him of all.
Well, meaning on the trip to NATO with Putin.
Well, of course it is. If he's in his pocket and if Putin has stuff on him, and I suspect it's at least in the realm of possibility that Putin does, and he is a sort of Manchurian candidate, that in fact it will go well, because all of Trump's guys, many of them at the top levels of government, is that the Russians are terrible. The Russians are terrible, and they're coming. But if you got the allusion to the movie, it turns out, of course, that Putin may have stuff on him in which it will go easy. He'll shut up.
Well, if he has stuff on him, wouldn't that make it kind of a challenging meeting? Because he says, "Oh man, Putin's got all this stuff on me. He's gonna have more demands for me. He's gonna make me bow down to him even more." That would be a tough meeting for him.
Well, yes,
it?
Except that maybe that's the case. Maybe he will have to bow down to him because we all know about all those meetings, the Trump Tower meetings and all the rest. He may have to. He may not have a choice here, including the investments that he may have in Russia.
Boy, you have a bemused look on your face Mr. Honan.
I thought it was a smirk.
That's just aluminum hat. I think it will be his easiest meeting. I mean, he's got to go convince his NATO allies that, you know, that they all want NATO. They're unwilling to pay for it. What is Germany's up to? You're supposed to pay 2% of your GDP into NATO. Germany's at like 1.5%, and has promised maybe we'll get up to 1.75% in the next 8 years or something like that. I think the only countries besides us and
Greece,
you know, Estonia, Latvia, you know, they're all pitching in, but you know, I don't see you know Spain, Germany. I think that's going to be the hard part of the meeting. The Wall Street Journal reported yesterday. I thought it was pretty funny that apparently when did you read this? When Trump first met with Merkel, the first thing he said to her was, "Angela, you owe me $1 trillion." That was
it's a good icebreaker. That's good. I like it. All right, we have a lot of letters. Let's get to them.
Thank you, Joe. John says, panel, I'm concerned that success in blocking Kavanaugh could mean disaster in November, giving Republican base a reason to turn out. Hmm. Possible. Anything's possible. And Brian says, Supreme Court nominee, this is a great day for our country. For the most defenseless category of human beings, maybe now our nation can rise above the ashes of barbarianism and respect all human life. Hey, you send them, I read them. In no way should that connote endorsement. Brucey says, some reporting that Kavanaugh pick was, there is reporting this morning via sources, in quotes, that Kavanaugh's SCOTUS pick was carefully negotiated between Trump and Kennedy. Once Kennedy was assured Kavanaugh would replace him, he retired. If true, this is very troubling for a lot of reasons. Did it affect Kennedy's final decisions? Some of them surprising. And with Trump investigation decisions potentially coming before SCOTUS, ..
See, I actually thought that was, I don't know about that particular exchange, but I thought that was kind of a known thing, that a Supreme Court justice, you know, might stay on saying, you know, because I don't know who's going to replace me. And they do have those conversations saying, yeah, I will leave, but I'm not going to leave, you know, for this guy. I'll leave for somebody else.
Well, you don't see the amazing RBG retiring right now. She's obviously holding on because
that would be some conversation between RBG and Trump on who would replace her.
Yeah, I can believe that one.
You know, and now there's people that I again, this is Wall Street Journal, but there's people who are talking about criticizing Obama for not convincing Ginsburg to retire at a time early on when he could have replaced her. Is that a real thing?
We really believe, based on what happened when he did have a nominee, that
no,
would
but earlier on, you know, I'm talking first term.
You think McConnell would have ever allowed it? I don't know.
He didn't need McConnell in the first 2 years. Right?
Of these three, which are the ones that you consider to be most reprehensible? Trump, Giuliani, or McConnell?
For me, it's McConnell.
Yeah, I don't love McConnell, but I got to say on the judiciary,
yes, I was thinking about that. But I would say McConnell, but Trump and Giuliani are equally, I would say.
I think Giuliani is pulling out in front of Trump.
I don't know.
Okay, and here we go. Fiona says, comment, good boy, I'm concerned that Trump will be meeting with Putin one-on-one. There should be other people in the room, preferably someone outside Trump's orbit, of course. I'm saying of course. There should have been the same when he met with Kim Jong-un. Yeah, well, sure there should be. Thanks for that should be letter. I agree with it. But it ain't happening. Jay says, Supreme Court, love you, Rosemary. I feel the seditionist Senator McConnell should invoke his own rule. Let the voters speak. After the election, let the new House vote. Jay the bus driver. Pardon me, bus driver.
It's a fair point, right? It's not exactly the same situation, but it's a fair point.
Robert says, Roe v. Wade. Good morning, panel. Yeah. As much as I respect, hello, is something going on that I?
Yes, we're passing notes. I see.
Would you like to
we
share
don't
with the whole
share with the class?
No, right. No, no, we don't.
So help me, if I have to stop this car,
we wouldn't have passed the note. I mean,
no, it wasn't the passing of the note that bothered me. It was the conversation while I was reading these very important letters from our listeners.
Please go on.
Please, and thank you for that.
Sorry, yes. Alan.
Yeah. Yeah, I am working under the.
Are you sorry?
I have the no.
Oh, that's what I thought.
I've already read the letters. Go ahead.
Okay. And Robert says Roe v. Wade. Good morning, panel. As much as I respect and admire Rosemary, I think I might have to disagree with her view on the end of Roe v. Wade. If the Supreme Court were to reverse Roe v. Wade, then single issue voters would have no reason to come to the polls the following year, and Republicans will lose a large portion of their base.
It also means what I understand that, but also, you know, what do you mean by reversing Roe v. Wade? I mean, I personally would not like to see that happen, you know, in the initial instance. But there's also a difference between reversing it and leaving it up to the states, right? Where, say, you know, the state has the right to set its rules on abortion, and then going even further and saying even, you know, that no, to say that the Constitution prevents people
if your niece or somebody that your granddaughter or somebody that you loved and respected and you had no money and you were in Kentucky, right, or you know, one of those Alabama, one of those places, would you really think that they shouldn't have the right to determine their own body, Rich?
Yeah, no, I understand. But I think the last people who should be making those determinations about you know, people's private decisions is the federal government. Okay,
well,
I agree with you there.
I couldn't disagree with you more on that issue, because I think the federal government, the Congress, obviously has to make sure that everybody gets treated fairly under the Constitution, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, I also, yeah. I agree that the Supreme Court nomination and whoever is on the Supreme Court is especially important, and that they're going to be lifetime unelected jurists that really determine what happens to our country. I also, though, come around election time, if you ask voters why did they vote for this X candidate or Y candidate, I think the Supreme Court is down like 11 or 12
right.
on what why they really vote for
That's
someone.
Right.
The big
and that
issues.
Was, and that was a major error. On the, because I can't tell you how many people I talked to about what was going to happen in the Supreme Court if Trump won. And boy, was I right. And boy, you know, the fact is that it may be a 15th or a 100th, but, you know, we have to do a better job of informing people why this is such an important
Well, I agree with you both, but I think if Roe v. Wade were actually imperiled, if there were actually a decision, well, some people think it is now, but I mean, if there was a decision that actually made inroads on it, I think that would galvanize a lot of voters.
I'm so surprised at all the things that I thought would happen. I used to think that the day that somebody got more electoral votes than won popular votes, that would be the end of the Electoral College. Wrong? Was I ever wrong? I used to tell my students that, and I'd like to make an abject apology across these airwaves right now for having led them astray.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to more letters. Ray Graff is in the studio, the what we call DJ, Studio D.
There he is.
And he's behind the mic. He has...
is there something wrong with his finger?
No, it's, oh. He's just letting us know he's ready to go. Thank you very much. Putting a finger side of his nose off the chimney he rose. Ray Graff is next after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you. We have Alan Chartok, we have J.P. Miller, we have Rich Honan, and of course we have your letters, which Alan will read now.
I will, but first, there's been some scuttlebutt that I wondered if you could clear up, guys, and that is that the new nickname for Mitch McConnell is Cocaine Mitch. What's that all about?
Well, I was looking at
it. Joe, it's your job to clean this one
Yeah,
up.
Thanks very much. I don't know that it's the nickname came from, it was a question that was asked during the break by J.P. Miller asking where this came from because
it's
been
fortune.
Used. Ultimately, it came from U.S. Senate primary candidate Don Blankenship, who is on the phone right now. You're going to take the call?
I don't know how to shut the stupid phone. What happens is I now have these ear things, you know, hearing aids and Bluetooth, and the phone rings. I thought it only rang in my ear, but apparently, and who was it? It was Edna Bluecourt Cross for the fourth time during the day saying I could buy from them. I'm very angry at them.
All right, how about those letters?
Oh, yeah. Well, did you ever?
So it's a long term.
It's
a very long story about a guy who just sort of threw out a name, just threw out something in an ad, and
was it he ran for
the Washington Post decided to look into it. They found out that the shipping company that is owned by the McConnell family at one point
on one of the ships,
they found. A small amount of cocaine, and that's apparently where it comes from, but it has nothing to do with the use of the drug by the majority.
But God bless him; he's clean and sober now, and so we just send all of our thoughts and prayers.
That's funny, Rich. That is really funny.
And if you want to read more, you just put in "Cocaine Mitch Washington Post" and a whole. Article will pop right up, and you can read the whole sordid story, which in the end they give four Pinocchios to.
Joe, thanks for clearing that up.
Thank you very much. It's the least I can do.
Okay, and now Tristan says, Supreme Court Justices, good morning, panel. What is the procedure for increasing the number of justices on the Supreme Court?
See Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah. Would this be an appropriate response to what Mitch did to steal the seat that Justice Gorsuch holds? Well, the truth is, of course, anything
goes. See Franklin Roosevelt. He tried it.
You would need the votes. And in Franklin Roosevelt's case, as I remember it, the Democrats had heavy control of both houses of Congress, and it still didn't go.
I'm going to show my lack of knowledge on this, but I think it would involve a constitutional amendment.
Uh-oh.
It doesn't say that. Okay,
I don't think so.
But I know his court packing plan
didn't fare well at all. People
right.
got annoyed by right. that. Okay, so that's Tristan who said that. But you're right, Tristan. It could be done. But right now, you think that the Republican majority in either house of Congress is about to increase the number of Supreme Court justices. Mary says, Kavanaugh, part of the Bush legacy. Dear panel, so good to hear your voice, Rosemary. For a while, I'm going to add. I hope the glowing statement from George W. Bush about this nomination reminds everyone that this Supreme Court nomination is part of a GOP continuum. Anyone concerned about justice, equality, basic human rights, and even basic human health should remember that the GOP set the stage for this extremist takeover of the GOP in our country. While the GOP supports the worst and of the worst, no matter what, even the panel repeats the GOP talking points denigrating Democrats. Can I just say something about that joke? Could I have a little permission here? You know, what happens is as things get worse and worse for Democrats and for people like me, there tends to be a very unfortunate thing that some people turn on their own, you know, and they say things like the panel repeats the GOP talking points. No, we're a panel. We're supposed to say what people are saying, and we're supposed to agree or disagree. So, Mary, I am not happy with that letter, for whatever you care. And Timothy says, Schumer-Trump commonality. Morning, panel. Trump can be buddies with Schumer due to the senator's affinity with Wall Street. He is, after all, known as Senator Wall Street. And Kevin says, Mueller. If Mueller has evidence of direct collusion, now is the time to drop it. No president should be rewarded with two Supreme Court picks if they conspired with a foreign government to sabotage a Democratic election. Does anybody think that Mike Pence would not be nominating equally conservative justices?
Yes. No. Absolutely.
Okay. But that is interesting, though. If you buy the scenario that there's politics behind the Mueller investigation, then if there was something, this would be the time to drop it.
Well, if it was a political
not drop the investigation, this would be the time to drop the new charges.
Well, if it's a political process, you'd be right. But if in fact Mueller has, to his great credit, said, you know, I was the head of the FBI, I was at the Justice Department, I know how to do this, and I'm going to do it fairly. And if I find anybody in my team who has been openly partisan, I'm going to fire him, which he did. I have to have respect. And the polls, by the way, are going increasingly against Mueller. In other words, there are more and more people who are saying, you know, I'm frustrated by this. I want a Trumpian response from Mueller. And they're not getting it, and I don't think they should.
Yeah, I think it's more nuanced than that, though. I think, at least on the right-wing side, I didn't necessarily come in thinking Mueller was out to get Trump or something like that. I do, however, believe that where you are questioning at some levels, the integrity of the FBI, I think that's not necessarily a concept that somebody like Mueller is going to embrace. I don't think it goes into his thinking that the FBI agents doing the original investigation might have been so biased as to taint the investigation. I just don't think that's where his default would be. I'm not saying that he himself is biased, but I think he has trouble with the concept that FBI investigators could be biased, and that's where I disagree.
Okay, Claire says, I have to find it. I find it amusing how the all male panel danced around just what it is about Nancy Pelosi that made her a target for demonization, and how this hasn't happened to Chuck Schumer. The same thing between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. I wonder what it could be.
Hey, we had this conversation off air.
We did.
So I do not disagree with her.
Sharon says, Kavanaugh, I'm curious as to how Kavanaugh is against the idea of a sitting president being under investigation when he was part of the star team investigating Clinton. Something for him to be questioned on. I couldn't agree more, and I already said so on this very program, and I believe you're right about that, Sharon. And Russ says, balance of power. Good morning, panel. Trump conceded his Supreme Court choices early on to the old Republican Guard. He promised and will deliver a court dedicated to the premise that all corporations are created more than equal with inalienable rights. while the other people can get a lawyer if third-party arbitration doesn't apply, and that's Russ from Menands. And then we heard from Jay, who said, while some people may consider the new Supreme Court nominee a mainstream choice, what's to be said about his belief that a sitting president should not be the subject of criminal investigation? How in God's name can anyone have this notion about after Watergate? Have we not learned any lessons? Are criminals okay as long as they are president of the United States? And that's Jay in Lakeville. Well, you know, that's a very interesting letter that you've written here. Of course, Nixon got out not because he was going to be criminally indicted, although he was pardoned by Ford, which cost Ford an election, I'm quite sure. He got out because he was going to be impeached, and he knew it. And I've always said, Jay, for whatever it's worth, okay, posit a president who kills his wife. What? You got to wait till you impeach him? Right. That's absurd. And John says, the Supreme Court appointment, an LGBT perspective for the LGBT community. It doesn't matter who Trump appointed. None of his choices believe that we LGBT Americans are human. I expect to be stripped of my basic human rights over the next 10 to 15 years. Well, I think it's reasonable to think that you'll be stripped of some of your basic rights over the next 10 to 15 years.
All right, let's take a look at what we have left on the docket, which is quite a few stories, and I want to get to as many as possible. We'll begin with the fact that the president is now traveling and is headed to Europe and is going to visit with NATO, and we'll find out what we can expect from that trip, of course, then going, as Alan alluded to earlier, with a meeting with
Putin.
With Vladimir Putin. So,
is he going to London first, though?
Yes.
Is London the first meeting?
I believe so. For Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, this week's NATO summit presents a central test: how to preserve a U.S.-European alliance that he sees as crucial to America's security while not crossing a boss who doesn't share that view. The summit, which will bring Mattis and President Trump together with the traditional allies of the United States, illustrates the tightrope the former general has walked since arriving at the Pentagon. The two have differed on torture, the war in Syria, and most centrally for Mattis, the value of America's alliances as it confronts an increasingly aggressive Russia, as well as other threats. Mattis has compensated by keeping a low profile, downplaying differences with Trump, and quietly urging the Europeans to judge the administration by its actions, not by the president's tweets. But in recent months, Mattis's task has grown more arduous. Relations with Europe are at their lowest ebb in decades as allies brace for another acrimonious encounter with the president, who last month harshly criticized them at the Group of Seven economic summit in Canada.
Yeah, I don't think that Trump at bottom is questioning the value of NATO as a concept. I think he's questioning why we're the only people paying for it to the extent that was agreed. I think
could it be that we're the richest nation in the world?
It's percent, Alan. It's 2%. It doesn't matter if it's 2% of $20 trillion or 2% of $1 billion. It's 2% of GDP. And, I would suggest that if people had been paying this more, maybe we wouldn't have the Russians in Crimea and the Ukraine. So I
really? How would you stop it? We have the biggest armed forces, a huge armed forces. Nobody has ever said they're not being supported the way that they should.
Everybody, no, that's not true. That's exactly that. Not only is Trump saying that, but I can't pronounce the guy's name. Jens Stoltenberg.
I think that's
is that how it is?
Right.
The head of NATO.
The way you do that, Rich, is you say this.
He's been saying. He's been saying recently that more countries are contributing, but clearly it reduced the level of readiness when you don't have the money and you're not having the most up to date equipment. Clearly, the United States does, but not all the NATO countries do. Well, I think it's a very fair point for the president to make.
Let's just disagree on that and move right on. What do you got? Anybody?
Did you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think something that Trump is really looking forward to in England is meeting with the Queen of England, which I don't think
right.
that he has yet.
We're going to London. The guy can't go to London because there are too many protests for good reason, and he can't go to New York City where he has his offices because there will be, a lot of people out on the street if he does. This does not speak well of Trump.
All right. So I think that the meeting with the Queen will be interesting to watch.
Okay. Let's go now. Speaking of the Queen and England, let's talk about Brexit for a little while. This is the turmoil over Brexit. And Boris Johnson and Brexit minister have resigned, leaving Theresa May's government in disarray. And you thought things were just screwed up here. Prime Minister Theresa May struggled Monday to keep her government from imploding after the resignations of Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, a tousle-haired frontman for Britain's campaign to leave the European Union, and David Davis, her once loyal Brexit minister in charge of negotiating the country's split from the bloc. Ever since May bungled the 2017 election, losing a majority in Parliament, there has been speculation over how long she would hold the top job. That question has never been more urgent. As May prepares to meet this week with President Trump in his first official visit to Britain, hardline Brexiteers are openly debating Brexiteers.
Dun, 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 dun. Do they have hats?
Yeah, I hope so. Little
B-R-E.
They're openly debating a no-confidence vote that could sweep her from power. Okay, what do we make of Theresa May?
You know, it's kind of a different version of the resist movement, you know, here in America, right? There's, you know, for whatever reason, you have an election, the election has a result, and then there's a significant movement of people who want to deny the results of that election.
Sure.
I don't think that she was wrong in advocating, you know, the so-called soft
easy
exit.
Easy terms.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you don't want to be literally an island, right? If you're England, you want to be able to trade with other countries.
Well, Rich, an awful lot of people in England do want to be an island. That's the problem. They want to be an island, but it has costs.
No, they. I don't think they want to be an. I think their problem was that they never wanted to be an island economically. They wanted to be able to self-govern, you know, and not have somebody from Brussels telling them how they have to grow apples
or sprouts.
Yeah, and so I think that was the problem. But she's got to, at some point, you got to embrace it and say, look, this is the vote that I'm stuck with. I might have, she wouldn't have this job if it wasn't for that vote, you know. I think so. While a soft Brexit makes sense, her non-Brexit Brexit just doesn't. I mean, do you disagree?
I think she's in a really tough spot because what the voters and what her base wants is different than what is feasible when you're running the country. And that's a really tough spot to be in. You're seeing that with what's happening here in the United States. And so, yeah, she's in a tough position. And it's going to be hard for her to navigate with the hardcore Brexiteers wanting a hardline stance from her.
Well, let's remember that part of this is philosophical, you know, when people are quitting. Part of it is maybe it's my turn to be the head. We know that Boris Johnson can be a little bit of wicked, and some of these other guys have designs of their own. You can't last forever.
I'm just not convinced the EU, as presently constituted, works. I just think that there's, you know, we talk about globalization all the time. I just think there's too many conflicting constituencies. You can't have everybody be a buyer and everybody be a seller and have everybody be happy and have, you know, all these countries with very different cultures all trying to. I understand cooperation, you know, like a NATO, for example. But NATO doesn't involve somebody from England telling us how we have to vote here in America on something. And I think that's where I think the EU has gone a little too far.
Speaking of which, here's a question for the day. What in American history does what you've just said remind you of? The answer is the Articles of Confederation. Didn't work.
Yeah. But the Articles of Confederation didn't work because they didn't go far enough. They didn't go far enough in really establishing a strong central government. And they just basically said, hey, you know, if England comes over, we're going to fight, you know, but it didn't really go much further than that. I think you need to go further than that, but I don't think you need to go as far as the EU charter.
And we in America see success in different states as a positive thing, because while the culture in California and Texas and Florida and New York, we have somewhat different cultures, we also have the fabric of America that ties us all together, where Europe has very vastly different cultures in these countries that are very close together.
All right, that does it for us. Thank you very much. Alan, JP, Rich, we appreciate it. We'll be back with more after this.